From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions this week defended his decision to sue California over immigration-related policies, calling the state's sanctuary laws radical, and saying on Fox News that, quote, somebody needs to stand up and say, no, you've gone too far. You cannot do this. This is not reasonable, end of quote. At the heart of the suit is a set of laws banning local law enforcement officers from complying with federal immigration officers because of concerns over public safety. But the Federal Immigration Enforcement Program is under fire this week after a San Francisco-based ICE spokesperson named James Schwab resigned publicly. Schwab said he, quote, didn't want to perpetuate misleading facts. His resignation centers on the decision by Oakland's mayor to publicize an impending ICE raid in her city. Also in California, a video has emerged and gone viral of a suspected undocumented woman being wrenched away from her three daughters while walking in the street in broad daylight. The uniformed agents are seen disappearing the mother, named Perla Morales Luna, into a vehicle while her children stand by screaming in grief. The video has offered just one glimpse of Homeland Security's widespread Gestapo-style practices of separating parents from children. We turn to our immigration correspondent Juan Escalante, who is also the communications manager of America's Voice, and he is a DACA recipient himself. Welcome back to the show, Juan.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Let's start first with a lawsuit. The Sessions lawsuit is claiming that law enforcement, because California law enforcement in some parts of the state are required to not comply with ICE agents, that somehow that is thwarting federal immigration enforcement. However, nowhere in California are law enforcement officers required to stand in the way of federal immigration enforcement, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's very curious that Jeff Sessions has decided to pick this fight with the state of California at a time where he's being criticized by the president in such a strong manner. This response has often served from the federal government and from the Trump administration as being able to manage the way that they use their limited law enforcement resources to go after criminals instead of going after hardworking immigrant parents or immigrants who are contributing back to the states. That is, individuals who may not have a criminal record, may not pose a threat to society, but yet it's still, to this day, we continue to see Jeff Sessions and the rest of the Trump administration focusing laser on these individuals, as you may, you know, some of us may deem the low-hanging fruit, in an effort to beef up their deportation numbers and claim some sort of victory to their base that they're removing the quote-unquote bad hombres from our communities. But unfortunately, what we see is the reverse. We see people who are who have been community members for decades. We see hardworking business owners, and we see parents of U.S. citizens who are being targeted and picked up in check-ins or on the streets across the country, and specifically in California, where they have essentially said to the federal government, we're going to make sure that we enforce the law and that we're going after the real criminals in this country without having to use any sort of law enforcement at the state or federal level to instill fear and disrupt distrust between local communities and law enforcement as a way to prevent individuals from actually reporting crimes.
And what's really interesting is that apparently the legal precedent that Sessions thinks he has is based on a 2012 Supreme Court ruling was over a lawsuit by the Obama administration against the state of Arizona over the federal government saying that state was going too far in its immigration enforcement and violating the rights of people. So a ruling that essentially was on the side of immigrant rights, Sessions is using that to make his case that California is getting in the way of federal immigration enforcement. But isn't the law enforcement issue very important here, that California is saying that our police can't get involved in immigration enforcement because if they do, undocumented immigrants will be too scared to report real crimes happening. They will associate police with ICE if they don't already do so.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm speaking right now straight from South by Southwest here in Austin, and somebody pointed out something very, you know, that goes along the lines of what we're speaking about here. In the past couple of weeks, on Monday of this week, we saw two packages being delivered, these small bombs that essentially killed a teenager and injured two others across the city of Austin where this festival is happening. And the question was posed to me is, how is the immigrant community or any other minority supposed to report any threat that they may see according to these packages that are being delivered across the city of Austin if they're unable or they're scared of the police or reporting them to ICE afterwards? You know, we know that here in Texas, there's a so-called FB4 law that is at the state level that essentially cracks down on undocumented immigrants and tries to crack down also in municipalities that have these so-called quote-unquote sanctuary policies to make sure that they're shielded from any sort of federal enforcement. But at the core of the argument is essentially this question of public safety. If somebody sees something suspicious, are they going to be able and feel confident to report it to local police or state police at a time when the administration is clamping down so hard, and despite the fact of what result or what tragedy may be averted, will that person still face deportation at the end of the day? And I think that that's a question that not only we as advocates for immigration and immigrants must ask ourselves, but the community and the state at large must right. ask themselves if they can afford to forego a specific tip of a potential threat or a criminal just because a Trump administration is promoting this very harsh anti-immigrant policy now, at all levels of government.
Let's talk about what happened in Oakland. I mean, we've actually discussed this on our program before, where the Oakland mayor publicized information about an impending ICE raid because she wanted the residents of her city to feel safe. It's not clear exactly what impact her announcement had, but Homeland Security and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, came out and said that her announcement had thwarted more than 800 immigrants from being arrested and detained. And, you know, I'm assuming they're trying to make the case to prosecute the mayor of Oakland. But now we're seeing the ICE spokesperson in San Francisco, James Schwab, come out and say that he publicly resigned, saying that he did not want to be spreading falsehoods for the federal government, because essentially the federal government told him to lie about these 800 people. How important is it for a person like this to come out and publicize what he's being asked to do?
It's huge. I mean, when you think about the consequences that are being put through these agencies, we're not just talking about, you know, falsehoods in the sense of numbers. We're talking about the implication that a culture is being promoted and normalized within a law enforcement agency like Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also Border Patrol and the Department of Homeland Security, that essentially is the personnel and agents that it's okay to go out there and put this information out there to make sure that the selling points are getting through to the constituency and defending ultimately the Trump administration's agenda. So for this individual to come out and say that he did not feel comfortable spreading the accounts of 800 individuals getting away signifies that signifies just one thing and one thing only, that the Trump administration is willing to essentially push its anti-immigrant agenda and its mass deportation raid styles, separation from immigrants and their communities or their families at whatever cost it may be. And they're trying to use the apparatus that has been built in order to carry on. So for them to essentially try to lie and spin this as just another enforcement operation and say that the mayor of Oakland disrupted its massive targeted enforcement rate style crackdown on immigrants, it's a complete shocker to a lot of people that should not go unnoticed, because what it tells me as an advocate and what it should tell the community is that these are nothing else than lies and exaggerations to justify the kind of stuff that we've been seeing on video and that we've been seeing right. in the news all for the past year and months that the Trump administration has taken over.
So speaking of videos, we want to play for you and our audience the video of this woman being separated from her three daughters, just walking down the street in a national city, California, I believe it was the where it happened, Perla Morales Luna, and just in broad daylight. And this wasn't ICE, this was Border Patrol, another arm of immigration enforcement from the Department of Homeland Security. And her three daughters, they might be teenagers, are overcome with grief watching their mother essentially, you know, to them looking like she's getting kidnapped by armed guards. And just to warn our audience, this is a disturbing video. It's really disturbing to watch. Here is the video. And that is a short video that has since gone viral of a woman named Perla Morales Luna being disappeared into a vehicle by Border Patrol. Juan, how important is it for us to see this? We're hearing stories like this, but to see it and to hear the sounds is a whole other thing. And also, what do you make of the fact that this woman is being accused of being a suspected human trafficker?
Absolutely. Let's talk about first the importance of the video.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago, I wrote about how important it is to the community to stay alert and to make sure that they use cell phones or other kinds of technology to document this kind of instances, because this is the kind of proof or the kind of material that we need to showcase every single time that ICE denies using any sort of targeted enforcement or raid style techniques. This is the kind of stuff that helps us combat these talking points and the normalization of any sort of, as you called it, this type of Gestapo-like activity where, you know, people are being taken in broad daylight as they're walking, you know, to pay rent or to the grocery store just by agents without any sort of explanation whatsoever. As disturbing as this video may be and as uncomfortable as people may feel watching it or recording it or witnessing it, this is the kind of stuff that's going to help advocates on the ground make sure that they make a case against ICE, and furthermore, report any sort of abuse that may happen, not just in this case, but in others that we may be seeing across the country. So if you're watching this this video time and time again, make sure that you take note, because the next type of activity may be in your neighborhood, and we need to make sure that that is documented. Number two.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, just very briefly on this specific case, you know, we saw this video come out not too long ago. I would say a couple of nights ago, we saw the video being posted on Twitter and shared on Facebook through channels like through blogs like Latino Rebels and others, essentially decrying these tactics that were used to apprehend this woman. ICE was issued a very short statement through their official Twitter channels over there in San Diego. Custom Border Patrol issued a very short statement through their official Twitter channels, essentially saying that this woman was suspected to be a criminal, number one, and two, when posed the question as to whether or not it was normal for Border Patrol agents to be wearing plain clothing, as we see in the video, their response was saying this, if whether or not it was normal for undercover agents that were wearing plain clothing to be part of this kind of operations, their response was plain and simple, saying these are not undercover agents, they're just wearing plain clothing, which raises a lot of alarms and questions as to whether or not these kind of individuals are identifying themselves as law enforcement, as federal law enforcement agents to the people that they try to apprehend.
So we should also mention that just the act of speaking out and being loud about these issues no longer protects, it seems, you from being targeted. It used to be that individual immigration cases, and maybe to an extent it's still true, that when people really brought a lot of attention to an issue, Homeland Security, ICE, and the immigration in general would back down. But under Trump, we're seeing activists being targeted precisely for being activists. One of the latest cases is that of a young woman named Alejandra Pablos. She's actually a green card holder and legal permanent resident who has a criminal conviction in her past over a DUI. She's also very active as a political activist with the National Latina Institute for Reproductive Health. She works as a field coordinator for them and very active on immigration issues. She was arrested during a check-in with immigration officials in Tucson, Arizona, and she's been taken to Eloy Detention Center. I don't know what they're planning on doing with this woman who's a green card holder. How disturbing is this case?
It's extremely disturbing. It continues a pattern that we've seen, just that we saw in New York with a man named Ravi, who's He's leading essentially a very good sanctuary movement and mobilizing the community to be on alert and instructing them about the work that the community in New York can do to support immigrants and refugees. He is also facing deportation, for being an activist and an outspoken individual in regards to these matters. We saw a man in Washington State also being arrested after speaking out to the press, right, on behalf of his wife, who was also detained and deported, and he also faces deportation now. And I think for the Dreamer population, you know, this very small segment of the immigrant wing, when we're talking about undocumented immigrants, we've seen this kind of behavior not too long ago. I remember last year we saw the case of Daniela Vargas, a young woman out of Mississippi who spoke at a press conference after her father and her brother were detained by ICE. And after speaking out, she was also apprehended and targeted by ICE officials, despite her having a DACA renewal in place. So she was renewing her DACA protection, her DACA benefits, which would have shielded her from 2 extra years from deportation. And despite her case being open and under review, she was still arrested, she was still detained, and it wasn't until a massive outcry from the community and across the country was launched that she was released. So this is an extremely disturbing pattern that we're seeing about ICE and DHS and other agencies going after what they may deem political enemies, who are shedding light into a lot of the disturbing behavior and calling out their attacks on the immigrant community and across the country.
Now, let's also talk about the fact that there is this whole issue of immigration up in the air around DACA itself. The last time you and I spoke, it wasn't clear whether immigration would become resolved, the immigration issue specifically on DACA would become resolved in Congress with their fight over the spending bill. The lawsuit against the Trump administration for ending DACA has at present ruled in the favor of DACA recipients, saying that it was not legal for the government to just abruptly end this program that offered some relief and sense of safety for DACA recipients. Where does it stand right now?
You know, as of right now, DACA beneficiaries are still able to submit an application and apply for a DACA renewal as long as they meet the specifications of the program and they're still in good moral standing. What I ought to remind the audience is that right now, despite this injunction by two federal judges, one in California, one in New York, being in place, no new applications for DACA are being considered whatsoever. This is only applicable for the renewals. And with that said, this essentially continues to be a very big failure on behalf of Congress, who was given our legislative body that was given 6 months to address the dreamers and codify the DACA protections into law. What we saw, as we've spoken in the past, Somali, you and I, is that that Congress put various proposals, all of which were bipartisan, all of which were rejected by the White House, and this issue is still yet to be resolved. We're coming up close on the deadline for the so-called omnibus, or the overall budget, to keep the lights on in our government and keep it running for the next fiscal year. And right now, based on the headlines that I've seen and based on some of the conversations that I've been having with some colleagues, is essentially that there's a lot of stuff that could be added into this so-called omnibus bill. They're called riders. They're essentially bills or legislation that's attached to a huge spending package. And this could range anything from a DACA fix all the way down to potential money for Trump's so-called border wall, additional detention beds and beyond. But as of right now, unfortunately, we're still at the midst of waiting. And in the meantime, despite people being able to renew their DACA applications and their benefits, we're seeing a slow walk from USCIS, which is what I call is the paper pushing arm of the Department of Homeland Security, which is sitting in, you know, thousands and thousands of DACA renewal applications. And there's a lot of fear that despite the fact that people are renewing, that USCIS is not moving soon, it's not moving quickly enough to process these applications and approve them, at which case, as we mentioned with the case from Daniela Vargas out of Mississippi, if the permits and protections from deportations lapse for DACA beneficiaries, despite them having a renewal notice within USCIS, does not protect them from deportation, they will lose their job, wow. they will lose their ability to drive. And this is essentially a very big worry for a lot of advocates who are depending on this on
sort of backdoor way of stymieing the DACA program. Well, I want to thank you so much, Juan, as always, for joining us and sharing your perspective. We appreciate your voice on these stories.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Juan Escalante is the communications manager with America's Voice and a DACA recipient himself. He's also the immigration correspondent for this program, and we've been discussing recent immigration-related stories. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.